Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really excited because with us today, we have Matt Smith, principal of Colorado-based Kickstart. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Man, excited to chat. This is fun.
Good stuff. So why don't we start with Kickstart? Would love to know the fund's investment thesis.
Yeah. So Kickstart, I'll give you a little bit even background of the fund. So Kickstart was started in 2008, one of the first seed funds outside of the coasts. And, but kind of always with the thesis of investing in the Wild West, kind of the best entrepreneurs in the mountain states. So the firm was and is headquartered actually in Salt Lake City, but we just opened a second Denver office, which I'm kind of helping to lead with one of our other partners, Dalton Wright. But ever since 2008, it's kind of been this thesis that there's a more capital efficient, scrappy, kind of differently built entrepreneur between Phoenix and Bozeman, Salt Lake and Denver, kind of in that corridor. And so we invest kind of early stage for us would be a check of $500,000 in a pre-seed round. And I would say kind of an upper bounds of our investment into a pre-sound would be $3.5 million or so. But yeah, I would say relatively generalist, you know, because we are geographically focused, that kind of narrows you know, the aperture of what we're looking at. And then from there, we're just looking for venture scale. You know, we talk about dragons a lot at Kickstart. For us, a dragon's a 100xer, and we like to say dragons eat unicorns. And so, yeah, that's kind of we can probably get into that more, but we have a lot of kind of imagery and branding around dragons. It's something that we like to talk about a lot.
Awesome. No, I love it. And, you know, one of the things you remind me of, and I think this is really valuable for the founders in our audience is, you know, you have clients, investors of your own, LPs, who you're responsible for generating a return for. And, you know, sometimes it's intuitive, sometimes it's not. And I think it's just great to call out the fact that you're conscious of, you know, not only identifying great founders, but ones who have a potential to create a return for the capital that you guys are deploying. Would love to come back. I have a whole bunch of questions I'd love to unpack, you know, within the mountains as it relates to investing. But your background, would love to hear what your journey looked like and how it led you to Kickstart.
Yeah, I kind of fell into this by accident, if I'm totally honest. So I started my career at Qualtrics, a Utah-based SaaS company. I joined between the Series A and Series B when Sequoia and Excel came in. It was rapid growth. I was, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed out of college. I don't think I even realized how great of a company I was joining. And that was an awesome ride. I was only there for a couple of years, actually, but was there when we crossed $100 million in revenue, and it was just a really exciting time to see what a real venture-backed startup can be. I left that to build my own company. So I was building a company in the kind of the e-commerce data modeling and attribution space. So we were building models for Shopify merchants and e-commerce merchants to help them better attribute their sales from organic social traffic.
Yeah.
That was a ton of fun. But I think what was interesting, I actually loved raising capital. So it was a small startup, you know, raising like pre-seed and from angels. But I had other founder friends that hate raising capital. They're just like, I'm selling my baby. This is such a distraction, which I totally can like empathize with. But I really enjoyed trying to look at my own business through the lens of an investor. That startup failed. Candidly, that's kind of what happened, and that's how it works. But I went back to grad school, and that's kind of when the kind of like twinkle in my eye kind of came up, like, interesting, maybe I would go to the other side of the table. And so ended up reconnecting with Kickstart, a new Kickstart previous to that. And now I've been with the firm for about 4 years on the investor side of the table.
Great. So with your startup, what was your fundraising experience?
So we were lean and mean, right? We were small. So we only raised a few hundred thousand dollars kind of pre-seed. But I think it made me, one lesson I guess I would say I took away from raising capital as an entrepreneur is that investors were also my customer. I was selling them a vision, I was selling them on something. And candidly, I didn't understand the customer needs. Prior, when at Qualtrics, I was in a sales role. I learned to listen, I learned to understand and the customer need, go through kind of, a process to make sure that my solution selling, that what I had and what Qualtrics was selling matched what the customer needed to do. And as an entrepreneur, I just kind of had this kind of ignorance, I guess, like, oh, you're an investor, you have money, you must be, I should be a fit, right?
Yes.
But naturally, yeah, of course. And so I just really learned to like be kind of fascinated with the different kind of investment models, how an angel looks at an investment versus maybe a family office versus like a traditional fund, how fund size and fund dynamics and how like bandwidth of partners and board capacity to be on the board of a company is also a major selling point of what some investors are looking for and some are not looking for expressly. So it was just kind of a world I just wasn't exposed to as an entrepreneur and that I kind of learned to enjoy. And I felt like once I started to understand the business model of VCs and other investors, I could sell the vision better, right? I could actually know what they were looking for, or I could move along and say, hey, you know what? You're probably not a fit for what I'm trying to build here.
And so, in the 4 years that you've been at Kickstarter, have you seen any maturation amongst founders in the early stage ecosystem where maybe they have a better appreciation that they not all investors are the same?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, repeat entrepreneurs know that game, right? They've learned that, I think, through raising capital and through building relationships with investors. And so you can pretty quickly see an entrepreneur who gets the game and kind of understands our business model. Would I say I've seen like a maturation of founders that understand that? I don't know. I find myself kind of more and more, one of the biggest reasons why, we pass on investing in a company is because it doesn't fit our model. And so I feel like I'm kind of over and over explaining our model as a
No.
way to like show founders like this actually isn't. I get it. I had investors tell me no. Like it hurts. It sucks. I get that. But so much of the reason why frequently why we say no is not something personal. It's because it doesn't fit the model that we're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's brilliant insight. Again, for the founders and audience, it's a numbers game to a degree. Absolutely won't get discouraged if it's initially not a match.
Yeah.
Fortunately there's over 2,000 funds in
Totally.
the country. And so, persistence and determination are definitely valuable in that regard. All right, so now 4 years of Kickstart, focus on the mountain. Would love to get your perspective on how you see multiples when you guys are investing compared to, say, the Bay Area, where there's a significant concentration of other VCs, as to say the East Coast, and how that's benefited Kickstart's LPs over the years and partners. Yeah.
So I would say at an early stage, at a pre-seed and seed stage, we're less concerned about looking at, multiples as we invest. We consider it. It is more of a function of ownership, right? We're looking to get, for our fund, we're looking to get, somewhere from 10 to 15% ownership into a company. We're looking to invest somewhere from 500K to 3.5 million. So like the algebra comes pretty simple of what, we're going to kind of value a company at. Because we're, the stage we're coming in, we're talking, early pilot revenue, maybe, 500K in revenue, approaching 1 million in revenue, but like still very, very early. And so to give a multiple on revenue or something would be pretty punitive to these entrepreneurs. So definitely as like companies mature and they reach like larger scale of operation, you see a compression of multiples. And so I guess I look more at multiples as I'm on this back on the side of the entrepreneur. Once we're investing in the company is we're looking to raise the A, the B, looking at acquisition, that's kind of where multiples come into play in my world. And I would say right now it's multiples are just a they're just a proxy for potential. That's all they are, right? And so a business that is growing, a business that has high retention, a business that has figured out how to lubricate the gears in the machine, to put a dollar in and get $4 out consistently is going to get a different multiple than a business that is, putting a dollar in and getting a dollar and 5 cents out, right? Like it's just a symbol or a signal and a whole placeholder for potential. And so I would say, like in general, SaaS at an exit level where we're seeing, companies be acquired right now, I would say a good outcome is in the high single digits to, call it like 7 to 12. Would be like, that's a good strong outcome. Again, depend so dependent on the business model and the industry and all these other factors. Obviously, AI is a hot spot right now. So, companies that are have showing traction and are interested in that space, we're seeing multiples in the even in the 20s, and up from there. But those are outliers, right? Those are definitely unique. I think those are not what the median by any means on the bell curve is. And then, at investment, yeah, I would say like recently we just did an investment in a company that's, well, let's see, let me try to think that math through. They are doing a, they're approaching 2 million in revenue, and we invested on a, like a low 20s post money valuation. So call it like, 11 to 12 X, revenue multiple on that company that we just did.
Full bunch to unpack. Why don't we, so I'd love to get your sense and outlook. And the context I'll throw out is Fed starts raising rates early 2020. Arguably there's a reassessment of risk. From my perspective, venture capital. It was called a winter. Maybe it's a a non-controversial way to characterize
Sure.
the environment. But I'm starting to see green shoots. Would love to know if you're seeing the same, and what you think the next 4 years have. And for everyone's benefit, we're recording this, in early 2025. New administration in place, arguably, bullish on the economy. But love to know what you're seeing.
Yeah, so I think liquidity is the flywheel that makes this work, and so I think, I'd say that's accurate, that we had definitely had a slowdown in kind of a winter, from like, mid 2022 to, about, I would say maybe late Q3 of last year, and green shoots starting to hit. So we've had a couple of companies be acquired. I'm on a board of a company that just signed the deal to be acquired 3 weeks ago. I
That's
was, yeah, thank you. We're excited about that one. So it's kind of a proxy for activity, but honestly, it was just quiet. Like so usually frequently, you can imagine we have a investments in many companies, we have many holding positions, and we have kind of your classic PE roll up and other acquisition groups kind of always asking us what companies are interesting right now, who should we be watching. It feels like those calls just turned off for like 18 months. Like it was just quiet. And as a proxy, 2 weeks ago I had one of those groups reach back out after about 18 months. Hey, we're looking to do some deals here in the first half of the year. Here are three of your portfolio companies. Can I talk to them? Can we get connected? They're in exploratory mode. Like, are they going to make a deal or not? Like, who knows? But the activity is coming back. So I think I'm feeling the same thing. I'm feeling bullish. I'm seeing green shoots. And I think there was a lot of people that raised when, it was the right time to raise. They raised right before the slowdown. And a lot of them got disciplined and just held onto their capital. Not all of them. But some of them got disciplined, and now they're saying, okay, we're able to see kind of like this uptick. We think we're kind of starting to rebound. Let's make some acquisitions before there's a full return to multiples and we can't get like the pricing arbitrage that we want. So I think it's coming back, but I do think that over the next, call it 2 years, I don't know if I have a crystal ball good enough to look out 4 years, but call it over the next 2 years, I see a return to kind of normal. I wouldn't say like back to like some type of peak, but I see a return to kind of equilibrium, I think.
okay. You mentioned AI. To what degree is that acting like a tailwind? And also, how are you guys subsequently factoring it into your investment decisions?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think if you think of like the classic kind of innovator's dilemma, bottom-up disruption model of like startups coming in and having some room to grow before they feel competition. I feel like those feedback cycles are slow, are speeding up, excuse me. Maybe before you had 4 or 5 years to go out and build a moat. And in a weird way, AI is, it's shortening those cycles are getting tight. Like there's a company that I invested in last summer, and we knew it that it would be more of a land grab, kind of a like a race type of opportunity for the company. I think they had two or three formidable competitors when we made the investment. We picked this team because we liked them. We liked some signs of what they were building. But in 7 months, we were just trying to walking through this as a board. There's probably like 15 or so competitors suddenly, right? Because AI is helping startups build so much quicker, it's turning into like these cycles of innovation and disruption are so much faster. So candidly, as an investor, it gives us a little bit of pause. We've seen several really interesting startups that get to revenue quickly, but having seen this pattern now, we're saying, okay, well, maybe the bar is going up. Maybe it's easier to get, out of the gate into 500K. So does our bar go up, and do we need to be looking for companies that can cross a million and a half? I don't know, candidly, on that. Like that's still kind of a thesis and a lens that I'm looking through, but it feels like AI is raising the bar on an early stage startup on what they can do, what they can accomplish. And so it's making us be very selective in the investments we make, because in 3 months we might be disrupted by something new.
And so I'm out of curiosity, then, do you have any sense, and I get that it's still early innings, but do you see pre-seed deals taking place a little bit later now? Or do you feel like, right now, no, it's maybe it's Kickstart that's being a little bit more, what's a good word? Not conservative, but cautious.
I think I'm seeing the deals take longer, and I think it's just because we've had this slowdown, and there hasn't been like a wave of funds that have raised again. The funds that do have capital just have the time to watch a little bit longer, and so it's more of a slight de-risking of engaging with a company, tracking them for 3 months, for 4 months before like making an investment, versus in 21, you meet a company, you need to make a decision in the next 14 days, or you're not going to get a chance to invest in this company. And so like that's, I think that could be seen as discouraging to founders, but at the same time, like taking 2 to 4 months to raise a round of funding is not crazy. It's not like abnormal, right? And so I think I kind of, to my earlier point, I just think I see us returning to a bit of a like a returning to a normal state. Like for context, I'm looking at this right now. In the last 12 months, we have done 13 investments, 13 new investments, and call it like 8 follow-on investments, 9 follow-on investments, I guess, in portfolio companies. So like still actively deploying capital.
Right.
But just having a little bit of extra time to be selective in the bets that we make.
Yeah, I'd argue that benefits the founders as well. In an environment where capital is really loose, I mean, it gets mis it's going to get misallocated at times. And so I think this, forces founders to be a lot more deliberate of how they think they're running their business, knowing that they have to be able to, show staying power, especially in a world, you're right, I'm seeing a lot of the same things, this amount of program or companies that are selling similar software solutions popping up everywhere. So I heard revenue, I heard product. When you guys are looking at companies for the first time, what other criteria do you use to make a decision?
Mean, obviously, team's got to like, it's got to be ahead of product and even revenue. My favorite operators and entrepreneurs that I interact with are the ones that I, in a 30-minute meeting, I leave feeling like I just, took intro to 101 course, a college course of like, oh, okay, just sat at the feet of the professor. They know this space way better than me. Every question I asked, they had an answer that spawned four more questions. And as I gave those four more questions, they gave an answer that spawned four more questions. And like, I love a founder interaction that I feel like I can just learn, because we're a generalist investor, right? We're never going to be as educated or in the weeds and in the details as the entrepreneurs. And I love feeling that. Always gives me a little bit of pause when I'm 15 minutes into a conversation and I kind of out of questions. It's and like I feel like I've reached somewhat understanding of what the, you know, call it like 80% parity with the founder. I'm a little bit like nervous that we've got the right, you know, jockey to come chase this. I love interacting with the founders that just know everything about their market and their space. I also love founders. This seems like obvious, but entrepreneurs are the biggest shareholders of the company. And I love it when I can see that behavior in an entrepreneur. They're acting like the biggest shareholder. They're pointing out the biggest risks that keep them up at night, the biggest risks that are going to sink their investment into this company. And they're approaching me and saying, "Hey, here's my three risks. This I'm raising capital for these. I think, you know, you could be the right partner to help me. You know, how should we attack these risks? Do you want to like link arms and go try to like figure this out?" I'm way more interested in working a founder that has that kind of ethos versus one that's, "Hey, it's all up and to the right. Everything's perfect. You know, no need to ask too many questions because we've got this figured out." Like, I'm always immediately nervous talking to those founders.
Good clue. And so great segue then. You know, love to hear your guys' philosophy on support. How hands-on, hands-off do you guys normally find yourself?
Yeah, so I like to say that, you know, we ride on the coattails of great entrepreneurs, and I'm going to be open in admitting that. Like, entrepreneurs are, you know, they're the spark that makes this flywheel work. And I'm never going to come in to, you know, push a founder to the side and hip check them and say, "Actually, this is how this works." But I think where we can add value is in really in two spots. Having, you know, being with a firm that's been doing this for 17 years, we know a lot of people that have gone through a lot of ups and downs, who have, you know, plenty of scar tissue. So we try to do a lot of matchmaking on that front and say, "Okay, in the first like 30, 45 days of our investment, let's get you connected with two or three really relevant founders that have faced a similar, you know, maybe go-to-market dilemma or maybe a similar like product hurdle that you can connect with." So we like lean on that a lot, connecting our portfolio entrepreneur founders with other founders. And then it's kind of the other side of the same coin, but hiring, right? At the pre-seed and seed level, most of the expertise that you need is not in the company yet. Once you read Series A, Series B, you probably have a fair amount of experience inside the company, and you have more networks inside the company to find, you know, awesome talent. But when there's four of you in the garage, like grinding out stuff, like, you just don't have that same reach. And so we lean in a lot at that level of like helping with hires like 5 through 10. We think that's like a big leverage point where we have just a different lens of looking at a lot of companies, looking at a lot of people making career moves. We have a dedicated team member. We have actually three team members that kind of support these types of things. They're always fielding requests and updates from people within the portfolio. We broadcast it to our own portfolios that like, this is a thing that we do. If you're looking to move, obviously you want to be delicate in that. We're not here to like poach the best talent out of the portfolio, but as people are ready for a move or it's not the right fit, we like to keep our ear close to the ground and try to direct them back into the portfolio.
Okay. Opinion on office versus remote?
I'm kind of an old school. I think you got to be in the office at least 3 or 4 days a week. I think there's definitely a spot for hybrid. I think you're not going to get like top talent if you can't have the flexibility when, you know, kids have soccer practice or someone's sick. Like, you have to have a hybrid flexible approach. But especially I think at the sub 15, 20 person company, you have to, like, the osmosis of just being in the same space in between meetings is like, it's invaluable. And I feel that even now, like, right? Like, part of the firm, I'm here in Colorado, and there's 10 or 11 of our team members in Utah and two of us in Colorado. Like, I immediately feel that now. And so I'm on a plane a lot. Like, I still need to be, and our team is on a plane a lot, like coming out here, meeting with entrepreneurs. But like, you just can't replace it, in my opinion. So I think you've got to be together.
Yeah, 100% agreed. If you can make it work, tremendous value. To your point, I mean, if there's core members of the team who bring either experience or skills, and they're not an immediate, geography. Hey, Zoom is brilliant. Being able to access them can make all the difference in a company's success. But on the note of Colorado, hey, before we got started, I understand you guys have an exciting new initiative, 14 founders. Would love to hear all about it, and feel free to give it as big a plug as you'd like.
Sure. So what I'll say on this, for those that maybe aren't familiar, Colorado, known for these iconic 14ers, peaks over 14,000 feet in elevation. There's 58 of them across the state. It's the highest density in the United States of 14ers. And they're like a kind of like the locals in Colorado call it, go bag a 14er. Like how you cross people at the summit and it's like, what number are you on? It's like, oh, I'm on my second. Okay, I'm on my 40th, right? Like I met an entrepreneur last week, or sorry, last month that did all 58 of them. And it's like, okay, there's no joke. Some of them are like remote. They're not easy to access. They're pretty like, serious, like mountaineering. We love that imagery of a startup, right? Like setting out on a journey to reach a summit, kind of following a trail that's somewhat blazed by others. And at times when you're like on these 14ers, like there's a bit, you're in a bit of the scree, you're in a bit of a scramble. There's not like a defined path. You've got to follow, I don't know if you know the cairns, the little like stacks of rocks that hikers before you set up to kind of guide your way, right? There's a ton of analogies in entrepreneurship and climbing a mountain. So we thought it'd be really fun just to kind of, lean into that as a fund. And so we started a program called 14 Founders. We're going to write 14 $140,000 checks, which is really early for us. We're going to do them in really favorable terms. We've done some of them uncapped or really like really friendly discounts. The idea is just to get the earliest and most interesting entrepreneurs in Colorado some early capital to go to work. And we're doing all these with other great partners in the Colorado ecosystem. So we've partnered with on one check with the University of Colorado in Boulder, CU Boulder. We partnered with Greater Colorado Venture Fund based out of Durango that focuses on rural based founders. We did a deal with Range Ventures here, kind of a staple and a great seed fund here in Colorado. We're looking at a few others with some other local accelerators and other investors. But the goal here is to shine a light on the 14 of the coolest companies in Colorado, as well as 14 of the our fellow ecosystem partners, whether that be investors or universities or accelerators. And then it's just a good chance, honestly, to get outside. So every summer, anybody who wants to come, we go do a 14er together. Last year, the three investors that we hit, or the three investments we had done just prior to the hike came up on top of the mountain, gave them a gold jacket, just had a little bit of fun, a little fanfare out in the mountains. And so, yeah, we're doing that again. And we're just looking, like I said, we want to meet 14 amazing founders here in Colorado, get them some early capital and do it alongside great ecosystem partners.
Great. And how can those founders find information on the program?
Yeah, 14founders.com. Nice and easy. You can check it out and then reach out and love to chat more.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, especially if someone hasn't been to the Rockies yet, I mean, talk about icing on the cake. It's one of the most amazing places in the continental United States. That's
Yeah.
great. Good stuff. Matt, it's been an awesome podcast. A question I enjoy asking all of our guests is a little bit of reflection. So as you think back on your career to this point, and you had an opportunity to go back and have a conversation with your younger self, what would you say?
Don't be afraid to ask. I've gotten so many opportunities that were not, listed on the job board that were not, that didn't come through the front door. Amazing internships, as a student, startup experience, even getting into Kickstart. Like, my advice is try don't to avoid the front door. Try to go in the side door, the back door. Talk to people, ask. I can like run through so many experiences of meeting someone who's really interesting and just making an ask to say, hey, can I be involved in what you're doing? Can I learn more about this? Not being a leech necessarily, but don't be afraid to ask. The worst thing that can happen is people say no. As an entrepreneur, you're always asking for capital. You're asking people to, give up their cushy job to come do startup life and grind with you. Like, you can't be afraid to ask. Ask, and more often than not, people will say yes.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. It's
There you
great.
go.
Good stuff. Matt Smith, Principal Kickstart. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode. It's great. A tremendous amount of insights. And again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinStrat Management. Another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Matt, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Christian. This has been a ton of fun.
Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor who would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.